Your Monday Night World War III edition here on Republic Broadcasting Network. Please, while there's still time, go to republicbroadcasting.org, smash that donate button, send the much needed fundage to keep free speech alive for your children and grandchildren. You can make your check or money order payable to RBN. Send it to 2251 Double Creek Drive, Suite 302, Round Rock, Texas, 78664. Call that debit or credit card into Mike, and he'll take your money, and you can also use PayPal. Special World War III edition to analyze the Russian referendum tonight. We're joined by Dr. Patrick Slattery. I wouldn't have anyone else.
I don't know how to put this.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you very much.
I'm kind of a big deal.
What are you?
I'm Batman.
An extra day of Patrick and Jeremy. What did they do to deserve this?
They listened to RBN. That's what they did.
So I was very anxious over the weekend to see what would come of these referendums. I searched the net. I haven't found any definitive websites telling us what the outcome is, but I did find this one from Reuters. The headline reads, Russia prepares to formally annex 15% of the Ukraine. So I'm assuming that the referendums are going well for Russia and that the media is sort of trying to get ahead of that. Did you get a chance to take a look at this Reuters, or have you looked at other websites? Maybe you've got some things that you want to share.
Yeah, and I was also paying attention to the Italian election, but what I have seen... the election's taking place over several days, so I don't think there are final results, but they have released preliminarily voter turnout, and they need to get 50% voter turnout for the elections to be valid, and they're past, in three of the regions, they are past 50%, and in, I guess, Kherson is the one that's just below 50%, but it's not over. They're going to get their 50% plus turnout. They'll get high turnouts, and they'll get a high enough percentage. It's pretty much a foregone conclusion. There's four regions who declared independence and have had their independence accepted or recognized by Russia. And for these two, this is strictly a matter of membership in the Russian Federation, and they are 90% plus for sure. When they voted for independence, it was 97%. So those are locked. They're heavily ethnically Russian. The other two, Kherson and Zaporozhye, Russians might be about half and half, but even the Ukrainians there are likely to speak Russian, and they're gonna pass with comfortable margins. There doesn't need to be fakery. they'll pass with comfortable margins. And I guess tomorrow, I think it's the last day, or maybe today's the last day of voting, or maybe tomorrow. But, you know, they're several hours ahead of us time-wise. They're, once those election results are certified, then the applications for membership in the Russian Federation get sent to Moscow, probably on Wednesday or Thursday. The Russian Parliament will vote to accept them, and probably on Friday, Vladimir Putin will, if not before, he'll give a speech in the Russian Parliament, you know, finalizing it, and they will be admitted to the Russian Federation probably by Friday, by the end of this week. And then after that, you'll have 300,000, well, maybe not 300,000, but you'll have a very large hunk of the regular Russian military move into those regions. And the thing is, you haven't had the Russian forces in Ukraine. It's been an expeditionary force. It hasn't been that large. Most of the fighting has been conducted by the militias of these regions. Well, now you're going to have the Russian regular army ground forces, not just the artillery. So it's going to change things.
Well, thus we heard Russia, mobilizing a lot of its troops. That was a big headline, I think, Friday last week. And when I was searching, the media is trying to get ahead of this big time. When I was searching for headlines on referendums, ABC News from 19 hours ago, Ukrainians scared by Russia's preordained referendums. Washington Post, 2 days ago, Russia rounds up Ukraine voters at gunpoint for staged referendums. Washington Post also, Russia mobilization blasted as staged referendums continue. They're really trying to get out in front of this because they know the way the wind's blowing. They know these regions are going to go Russian. And once they do, then an attack on any of these regions, as we mentioned last week, will be an attack on Russia.
And there will be an attack on them because the Ukrainian government under the Jew Zelensky he's not going to accept the results. That's also a foredrawn conclusion. And at some point, there will be an attack. I mean, they are. I can't remember the name of the town, but they're still trying to maintain like some sort of tiny foothold in the Donetsk region, or the Donetsk People's Republic, whichever you want to call it. Some tiny little town, Krasny, what is it? Krasny something, I can't quite remember. And there are parts of Zaporozhye that are not under, and I guess parts of Kherson that are not under, not completely under Russian control. So there's going to be an attack. And the Russians have taken off the gloves. And the more the fighting goes on, you know, the best thing for Ukraine, which isn't going to happen right now, but the best thing for Ukraine would just be to sue for peace, to accept that these four regions are gone, as is Crimea, accept that they're gone, and just, you know, in some ways, if you're a Ukrainian nationalist, if you're a genuine Ukrainian nationalist, in some ways, losing these regions is a good thing, because this is full. These regions are full of Russian speakers, ethnic Russians, and so-called ethnic Ukrainians who speak Russian as their main language. If you want to promote a Ukrainian ethnic identity in the Ukrainian language, then you should want to divest yourself of these regions. You know, 60 years ago, when Malaysia gained its independence, there was a period of time where Singapore was part of Malaysia. Malaysia spit out Singapore because there were too many Chinese. With all those Chinese, how were they going to build a Malay identity? So they spit out Singapore. And if you're a genuine Ukrainian nationalist and you want to, you know, make build a Ukrainian identity and Ukrainian language and Ukrainian culture, then you should want to shed these regions, along with, frankly, Kharkov and Odessa and Nikolaev. They should shed these regions, become smaller, and then there'll be more Ukrainian. How many people in America would, at this point, be happy shedding a lot of regions, you know, counties in California or other places that have become Mexican or, you know, some other unassimilable population? Wouldn't that be better?
And for Ukrainian true nationalists, it would. But, I mean, what does the Jews that run Ukraine, as well as the Jews in the State Department of the United States, their main goal, and you called this months ago, is to regime change Putin. I mean, you called right when the invasion happened, and I would have the audience listen to you and Dr. David Duke on today's show. What is today? The 26th of May. You all went into a history of Russia.
Are you talking about today? Today, September or May?
I meant September. September 26th, right? You and David Duke went into the history of Russia, Jews in Russia, communism in Russia, and the history of the Ukraine up to the Maidan coup. And you all did a great job of bringing us up to where we are. And then you also had a great show with on National Bugle today on RBN with Mark Collett. And you all discussed the purpose of this whole thing is regime changing Putin. And they're willing to sacrifice whatever and however many Ukrainians, they don't care. They just want, I guess their goal is to try to turn the populace against Putin. I have two questions. Number one question is, in the process of doing this, you know, will the West risk regime changing themselves? Because their populace is getting very upset and very tired of this war. There's no support for it. That's question one. And then question two, the populace of Russia, they're thinking Putin's not going hard enough. You know, everybody's saying, well, maybe we'll drag Russia down into this war and we'll get them entangled. But Putin's been very measured in his responses and in his actions, as he should be. But the populace of Russia, from what I'm gathering, thinks he should do even more. And that could be, if he is in any danger of losing public support, that could be the context in which he's losing support, if he is at all. If you could address those questions. So, you know, will the West risk regime changing themselves? And to what extent does the populace in Russia want Putin to go harder?
Yeah, I mean, the Western countries, our country, have been doing policies that are just so much opposed by its regular population. And to the extent that they have support from the regular population, it's Stockholm syndrome, brainwashed, gaslit portions of the population. You know, so at one thing after another, and, you know, the 2022, the current year thing, of course, is Ukraine. And none of these are going well. The Ukraine's not going well. The COVID things are blowing up in their face. People know that black lives, I would say black lives don't really matter, but that Black Lives Matter is just basically a labor union for black criminals, or, you know, a support organization for black criminality. People know all this stuff. And you have the election in Italy over the weekend, and you've got a coalition with this Meloni, who's kind of a hot chick, And is she based? Not exactly, but she does want to shut down the illegal immigration and some of the other stuff, I guess what people might call the woke stuff. She still, you know, supports Israel and supports the anti-Russian sanctions. So she's not based, but she's a big improvement. And she will have a genuinely, or at least a halfway based Matteo Salvini in her cabinet, I would think, and probably in a very important position, because he's a coalition partner. So, you know, the Italian government has fallen. You're going to have more and more governments effectively fall, and we'll see what happens in the midterm elections. I mean, we know there's fakery. But yeah, I think that the Jews who effectively run these countries, including and especially our own, have overplayed their hand.
And let's talk about real quick a question on the Italy, and then we'll move to the midterms here in America. So yeah, this female that won Italy, I mean, no one's going to be perfect, but
it's Giorgia Meloni. Sounds Irish or something. Yeah, Meloni.
That's the most right wing you're going to get. So the populace is going for the most right wing, the person that's promising to deal with immigration, right? And right. Actually, Germany threatened Italy. The female over Germany threatened Italy.
You see, the German woman who is the president of the European Commission, so she's the effective leader of the EU. Her name is Ursula Dandelion or Ursula von Lederhosen, something like that. Ursula von der Leyen. I guess that's how you say it.
So that's even major.
Actually, like 20 or 30 years ago, she was also a hot chick when you get down to it. But yeah, she threatened. And I don't know if the German prime minister, this guy, Olaf Scholz, and you have another hot chick who's like the foreign minister, Annalena Ballerina Bauerbach. And I don't know if she's threatened the Italians, but I mean, these people in Germany who lead Germany are pretty much diametrically opposed to Giorgia Meloni.
Well, so I guess my point is Meloni is not an ideal candidate, just like Trump was not an ideal right. candidate. But both Meloni and Trump represented, and Brexit and all mm-hmm. of these far-right movements, they represented the most right that the people could vote, and they took it. In other words, they vote more right if they could, but this mm-hmm. was all given to them. So
Salvini was a different party, Matteo Salvini, and but Giorgia Meloni, for whatever reason, maybe because she's attractive, and maybe because Salvini's had, I guess he's had a few problems over the past couple years. Salvini's more right, but he was overshadowed by her. But he'll be back in the coalition, and so that's a right option. And then, of course, Sweden just recently also elected, the most right wing of their options.
Well, so I think it's safe to say that in the last 6 years since 2016, and when was Brexit? 2015. It was right along in there.
I think Brexit was the summer of 2016.
Yeah. So in the last 6 years, I mean, the referendum on global homo has been, no, we don't want this crap.
Right.
In Europe and America. And the elites are getting worried. So, I mean, I guess that having been said, getting back to the Russia thing, I think everyone knows that the Russians in these areas, what is the Donbass, they're mm-hmm. going to Russia, and they're trying to get up ahead of that. And they're wanting to get rid of Putin. Now, why do they want to get rid of Putin? I mean, the reasons are plentiful, and we've went over them many times before. You can say natural resources in the area, as Mark Collett said, or you can say Putin got rid of the Jewish oligarchs. Russia represents the last stand of white Christian Europeans. Hey, we're up on the break, Patrick. Hang on with me, and we'll get back to this on the other side.
Consider this. Dead people see only what they want to see. And frankly, most of us are still dead. Let me give you the lessons of gold and five easy lessons. Number one, don't buy it because you need to make money. You buy gold because you need to protect the money you already have. Don't ever look at the price as a barrier. Look at it as an incentive. Number three, don't buy its paper pretenders. We talked about that a lot. Buy gold. Buy the real thing in the form of coins and bullion. Fourth, don't fall prey to glitzy television or Facebook ads. Do your due diligence instead. And that's what I try to provide you with and have for 26 and a half years on the air and 30 years in this profession. Fifth, don't allow naysayers to divert your interest. Allow yourself the right to protect your interests as you see fit. Jeff Bennett here. One of the ways you can do that is to contact Kettle Moraine Limited. Contact me by calling or texting me at 602-799-8214. 602-799-8214. You can also email me at kettlemoraineltd@cox.net. Let me help you protect your wealth and your family today. Once again, call or text us at 602-799-8214 or visit our website, Sierra Madre Precious Metals.com. Be glad to help you out. Be glad to answer your questions. That's what we're here for. No pressure, just good, hard, common sense. The decision then becomes up to you.
Hello, I'm Dr. Leonard Horowitz. I was right 30 years ago in warning the world about threatening lab virus outbreaks, AIDS, and Ebola. I was right 20 years ago when FBI Director Robert Mueller made me a suspect in the anthrax mailings because I warned the Bureau before the CIA's biocrime and Cipro sales psyops happened. I was right about COVID-19 being an AIDS-laced mutagen plan to resurge this fall to excuse officials' profitable depopulation globalization agendas. And I was right about the only safeguards being antioxidants and holy spiritual sustenance. Vitamin C, D, zinc, chlorophyll, oxygen, and oxysilver especially transmits the frequency resonance to neutralize the expanded function bioweapon. Oxysilver is a double superconductor of the healing power of love. It is the first nutraceutical invented to amplify prayer power and the faithful, loving intention of your heart. Buy, try, and stockpile OxySilver through HealthyWorldStore.com.
And Blue and Black will always be dedicated to William from Montana, the late William. I would value his commentary on this whole issue. Were he here, you remember when he came and sang that song?
Yes, I do. I remember that very well.
So, getting back to this Reuters article, it's entitled "Russia Prepares to Formally Annex 15% of the Ukraine." There's a paragraph in here entitled, "Can the West Stop Putin?" And Reuters says neither the West nor Ukraine can stop Putin changing the regions. Though the United States and its allies say they want the Ukraine to defeat Russia on the battlefield and will help it do so by supplying weapons, but not NATO troops. So I don't think that's the goal. As we've mentioned, I think the goal is to get the populace of Russia to go against Putin and regime change him. But I mean, the populace of Russia seems to want him to go even harder. Can you comment a little bit on that?
Yeah. Some people have tried to compare, some people think that this is about getting Russia bogged down in a prolonged war. I just don't see that as happening. I think the game plan was to use the war not to bog down Russia, because, like I've been saying from the very beginning, Russia is going to meet its military objectives, whatever those may be, and those have been changing over time. But the object of forcing Russia into this military action was to use it as a pretext to initiate unprecedented economic sanctions. And had they gotten China to go along, had they gotten India and China and these other countries to go along with the sanctions, the Russian economy would have collapsed, right? I mean, look at what bad shape the European economies are in, and they're not even subject to sanctions. You know, they're subject to having tried to apply sanctions on Russia, but, you know, they're able to trade with the rest of the world. They're just not trading with Russia, and they're in such bad shape. The Russians aren't in bad shape at all, but they would have been in very bad shape if the Chinese and the Indians had gone along with it. And perhaps if Putin had gone hard at the beginning, perhaps if he had tried to decapitate the Ukrainian leadership and drop the bomb on the Ukrainian White House or whatever government buildings in Kiev, if he had tried to take out the civilian infrastructure, perhaps the Chinese and the Indians and all these other countries, the Turks and the Saudis and everybody, perhaps they wouldn't have been able to resist the pressure to join in the sanctions. So, I mean, Putin might have had reasons for not going harder, but his people, for the most part, his people really understand this as an existential threat to Russia. And to the extent he's under criticism, it is by hawks. It's not by doves. You do have these small demonstrations, but really very small demonstrations. Mark Collett commented that on the eve of the Iraq war in late 2002, early 2003, you had a million people march in London. You had a million people marching in Madrid. You probably had at least half a million marching in New York. I was in a massive rally in Washington, D.C. There was massive mobilization. Didn't count for anything. But in Russia, these demonstrations are having a very, very small. And Russia's a big country, and so you would expect them to have at least some sort of demonstrations. But the bulk of the public opinion, to the extent they're critical of Putin, it's because he's too cautious. And maybe he is too cautious, or maybe he needs to be cautious because he is dealing with other countries and needed to cement their economic support or their economic good graces. And I think it's also telling that when the September crisis happened, where you had this Ukrainian offensive pushing against a very, very poorly defended part of the Donetsk, or not Donetsk, of the Kharkov region, and the Russians ceding some ground, that there was a massive outcry in Russia, but Putin didn't announce a mobilization then. He didn't announce anything at that time. He waited for another 10 days or 2 weeks or whatever it was until this economic conference in Uzbekistan, where he had one-on-one meetings with Xi Jinping, with Prime Minister Modi from India, with President Erdogan in Turkey, and others. And it was only after a meeting with these foreign leaders that he went ahead and announced the referenda and the mobilization. And I think that's an indication that not only does he have to consider Russian public opinion and other things and military necessities, but he really also needs to keep this effective economic alliance that he's been successful in building.
Let's get you back to that on the other side of the break.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
Have you been looking for a trusted long-term storable food company? We have a solution for you. Simply Clean Foods is dedicated to providing the best quality food you can buy next to fresh from a farmer's market. Our line of resealable fruits, vegetables, and meats are suitable for everyday use, and you won't have to worry about throwing away valuable groceries ever again. Our food is completely GMO-free, and our stringent quality controls, plus testing for heavy metals, makes us unique in the storable foods market. Simply Clean Foods' primary focus is to bring clean food to people all around the world and change the way we look at freeze-dried food in our daily cooking. When you purchase from Simply Clean Foods, not only will you be receiving high-quality food, but you will also be supporting veterans in need across the country and those who are affected by natural disasters.
Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on Long-Term Food Storage in the rotating sponsors banners to support RBN.
Simply Clean Foods. Do it today.
Extendivite testimonials on Amazon are very informative. Here's just a few. Carrie: great product, and I will continue to use. I've been taking it for over a year now. I'm 60 and feel great. I would highly recommend this product to anyone over the age of 40. Amazon customer, 5 stars. I'm quite happy about it. Extendivite has relieved what appears to be an angina problem, pain in the chest after climbing stairs, and short on breath. I'm quite happy about it. Amazon customer, 5 stars. Great product. I use regularly, and I rarely get sick. To get your Extendivite today, go to Extendivite.com. That's Extendivite.com. Or call us at 1-877-928-8822.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Standing 6'4", weighing 245 pounds of crime-fighting, political science-analyzing brawn, ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Patrick Slattery.
So, Mike, get off this anti-cicada agenda.
I'm a born-again traditional Christian, and my favorite possessions are right here on my nightstand. That would be the King James Bible and my .357 revolver.
I'd rather be ruled by Chinamen than Jews.
Cool it with the anti-Semitic remarks, right?
Just because you steal an election and terminate the republic doesn't mean you terminate the people in the republic, because we're still here.
I'm not taking the vaccine. Fuck you, Bill Gates.
There was a way forward still on January 6th. What needed to be done is to object to every single state.
The COVID-19 virus was the setup. The vaccine could very well be the bioweapon.
The Patrick and Jeremy Show, Tuesday at 9 Central and Wednesday at 1 Central.
Memory, your landline is burning holes. Recover the damage, bring it all home. Follow the breeze, just like a summer song. They stay there forever. I try to remember. Come
not show that special World War III edition. So Putin's measured response to the West and how he has been very careful, I think, as you're making the point, he was building alliances, making sure that he had economic alliances with China, India, Saudi Arabia, and this Reuters article sort of hints to that. The article reads, after imposing severe sanctions on Russia, though, there's not a great deal of economic punishment left to inflict unless the United States can get China and India to agree on some sort of cap on the price of Russian energy. That from Reuters. So, yeah, you're making the point that, I mean, Putin's being very measured for many reasons, but one of which is to build economic alliances. And now that he's built those, he's ready to up the ante and satisfy the will of the Russian populace and declare that anyone that, if the U.S. continues and the West continues to supply the Ukraine in attacking Russian provinces, that it will be war.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
And, you know, you look that those sentences you read from the article, unless the West has shot its wad, so to speak. There's not much more they can do to sanction Russia unless they can get China and India to go along, and they haven't been able to. And the relationship between Russia and China and Russia and India are stronger now than they were 6 months ago. And he's in a position now to up the ante, to increase, to take off the gloves in Ukraine in a way that perhaps he really wasn't 6 months ago. Because it was, you know, at the when this all broke out, it was a little bit unclear which way China and India and these other countries would go. And but as soon as China in particular, because China is the most important, India is important too, but China is the most important. And as soon as China announced that it wasn't going to participate in the sanctions and they started negotiating new trade deals with Russia, I think that's really when the war was lost.
And that's phenomenal with China and India, you know, being allies here.
Yes.
In an economic way, that's very significant. So Putin was getting all of his ducks in a row, and now he's ready to go to the next stage, which is up the ante on conflict if the West chooses to do so.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
So with that, let's go to calls for the last part of the show. I think we have Marcus in Idaho up next. Marcus and then Vinny. Go ahead, Marcus.
Hello, folks. Patrick, I'm taking issue with a few things you said.
Okay.
It kind of pissed me off. First thing is saying that we should jettison parts of America, which are just in flux with Mexicans. Where does that stop? You want to take out D.C.? You want to take out Texas? You want to take out California? You want to take out Washington? You want to take out... where does that stop? Do we stop with the liberals? I mean, where does that stop? That's not a good idea. We need to fight for America. We need to take Manifest Destiny to heart and say that we need to really rework this nation in a way that is positive, instead of just saying, well, this is all fucked up and just, I'm sorry.
Sorry for my language. This is English only. English only. But no, you're right. And actually, I thank you. I really wasn't meaning that this is what I think, that we should jettison parts of the country. But I was saying, if you are a hardcore Ukrainian nationalist, and there are a lot of hardcore Ukrainian nationalists out there, that these people should actually welcome it. And, you know, I don't like the idea of giving up parts of California or whatever. Although, honestly, I'm going to ask you, if Cuba were to take over Puerto Rico, should we fight for Puerto Rico or just say thank you?
That has not been, that's not a state. That is
no, it's
a
not
province,
a state.
And so, bye-bye. That's
okay.
That, all right. Yeah.
Let me jump in here.
A CIA hangout, then, something which is part of the, contiguous United States and Alaska and Hawaii.
Well, let me jump in. Patrick, real quick, I think you know this, Marcus. Patrick was not saying give up parts of America. He was using that as an example of what's going on in Ukraine. But that having been said, I mean, there are two Americas. And I do not share... I do not agree with, nor do I want to be part of people that want to kill babies and do child trannyism. And if these people in these liberal states want to do that, then let them go. That's me, and you can say whatever you want to that. But for the purpose of the argument,
we're in the devil's grasp right now. America is in the devil's grasp, and he has control over, he has been given control over this earth, and he has been given control over this this country. It's just like corporations aren't necessarily good. They're not people, but a corporation has an inherent greed, which is its structural foundation, which needs to take as much as possible and find out what its avenues are. And the corporations have been driving this anti-American prosperity ideal for a very long time.
Back to the original argument, Ukraine is not a country. It's part of Russia. It has been for thousands of years. So if fake governments in Ukraine run by Jews, if people in the Donbass that speak Russian, that love Russia, that are Russian, want to be part of Russia, then, I mean, Ukraine's not a country to begin with. So that's not even a good, you know, that's not even a good comparison.
How so? I mean, what's not a good comparison?
Saying that if we gave up California, that, you know, that would be un-American, and we would be given a part of America. Ukraine is not a country. Ukraine is
I'm not saying that it's a good comparison. I'm not trying to make that comparison. I'm saying that Patrick's comments on that were badly founded, because I think that
if California and New York want to do child trannyism and invite infinity illegals in there, and they don't want to change, then let them break off. That's what I'm saying. Patrick's not saying that. I'm saying that.
And I think that's a wrong way to look at things. I mean, I think that Manifest Destiny is an important part of American history and American prosperity and American futurism. Manifest Destiny means that we have a grasp upon this country, and if we allow these other individuals to reconstitute our country into a way that the devil wants, we're just saying, well, go ahead and give them that. Then we're just giving away our parts of our country to the devil instead of fighting. What we need to do is say Manifest Destiny is ours. We all have an inherent stake in this. And as Americans, we need to be able to fight for everything that we have, tooth and nail, even if it's a terrible fight.
Well, with that attitude in mind, and I'm not saying this, but with that attitude, then the only way to get back California and New York and these liberal states is by force, by military force. And I don't think that's going to happen.
No, that's not exactly it. You're a Christian. I know that you hold Christian ideals, and that there's a way to reach people in their hearts and everything, to reach into people's lives and bring people together. It's like having community, bringing people into barbecues and saying, hey, I don't know you, but why don't you come over to my barbecue and let's have some time and let's talk. That community building is bigger than the community destruction, which the liberals and the corporations have been doing for a long time, and we've been allowing them to do it.
Well, with all due respect, Marcus, and we're going to end this call in a minute, the people that want to chop off little boys' penises and change little girls into boys and do child trannyism and homo marriage, they're not interested in that, and they're not going to come onto our side. So with all due respect, I mean, we're going far afield. The whole example here was Ukraine's not a country. And if people in the Donbass who speak Russian and are Russian want to join Russia, they should be allowed to do so. and the illegitimate government of the Ukraine has no right to force them into an illegitimate government that shouldn't exist in the first place. That was the whole point. Well, we appreciate your point of view, and we'll always allow free speech on this show and on this network. Let's move on, though, to Vinny in Indiana. Vinny, welcome to the show.
Hi, guys. Patrick, you hear? Are you guys? Am I coming in good?
Yeah, we got you, man. Go ahead.
Okay. I'm sorry, Mark Collett. He's been a little bit more critical of Putin than Dr. Duke and Dr. Slattery. But I think, I think Putin has done a masterful job, and he needs to get credit for some of the diplomatic things that he's accomplished. You guys were just talking about the ability to get China and India on board. Has been one accomplishment. Another accomplishment is that he seems to be getting a reduce in the tensions between the Sunni and Shiite Islamic world, where you now have Saudi Arabia and Iran talking to each other, and when in comparison to when the Soviet Union collapsed in the 80s, one of the things that our U.S. foreign policy, which was at the time run by people like, the realist Jews who were heavily in running behind our foreign policy, they created the Iran-Iraq war, and that forced all of the Shiite and the Sunni Islamic world that had oil, they were all dumping the oil on the oil market. They drove down the price of oil. And that, really hurt Russia, too, because commodity prices collapsed. In this situation, Putin has, he's gotten control of commodity markets, and he has Saudi Arabia and Iran working together, and they're all working together to boost up the commodity prices. Isn't that quite an accomplishment?
I think it's an accomplishment. I just want to clarify Mark Collett's position. Mark Collett is a big supporter of Vladimir Putin. So it's not that much that he's being critical of him, but that he's worried. He's worried that that Putin is being pushed into a situation that's not going to be good for him or the Russian people, like a protracted, drawn-out war. And so it's not so much criticism that you're hearing as worry from somebody who is a Putin supporter.
That's correct.
But you're right. You were right about the massive accomplishments in putting together some of these economic deals, like the one you were mentioning. And a lot of credit has to go to Sergei Lavrov, whom Sergei Lavrov is a very serious person. I would like to have a Sergei Lavrov on our side.
Well, I know Mark Collett was very concerned about the Kharkov offensive, but that seems to have petered out. And that seems to have been more of a political move than a really sound, viable military move. And it's to me, from what I understand, from what people like Douglas McGregor are saying, is that for that Kharkov offensive to take place, we put a lot of chips on the table. We have a lot of long-term, kind of mercenary military assets, people from these various, mercenary groups that we've had all over the Middle East for a long time, now in Ukraine, and the Russians let them advance, but they're in danger of getting surrounded and captured. You know, our military now, we can't even begin to find physically fit men to fill our own military right now who have high school degrees. And, we have this last group of, we built an army that's highly dependent on these highly trained mercenaries, basically. And now these guys we've been doing this for the last 20 years, and these guys are now in their 40s and 50s. And this kind of relates to what the long-term criticism Victorian New England and the hardcore neocons, people who were brought up with the philosophy of her father-in-law, Donald Kagan. And Donald Kagan, like you said, he's famous for reinterpreting history, whether it's the Peloponnesian War, the Punic War, the kind of building an ideology to push, you know, hardcore neocon Zionist agendas. And, you know, he used to show up on C-SPAN, and people would call in and say, this guy's nuts. I mean, he would say, like, Hannibal was brilliant for wanting to invade Italy, thinking that he could do a regime change on Rome. And people said, well, how did that actually work out? I mean, Carthage was destroyed. they said, well, Carthage built a mercenary army that was dependent on them having a solid currency. And what happened? You know, Rome didn't fight Carthage in Italy. They took over Spain, and they took control of the money supply. And then Carthage fell apart. And, you know, everything we have that Israel and the neocons have has been dependent on the petrodollar. And now you have Egypt talking about buying grain in rubles. And, you know, we protected Israel by getting all the countries surrounding her, previously her enemies, on the petrodollar, corrupting those countries and giving Israel security. And all that Israel then tried to do was then get us into more foreign wars on their behalf. So to me, everything could start coming apart really quickly.
Yeah, things are coming apart really quick. The wheels are falling off our car.
Well, Vinny, we got another caller.
All right, thanks, guys.
Thanks, Vinny.
Thanks a lot. Let's go to Dan in Washington. Dan, welcome to the show. What do you have for Patrick and Jeremy on Monday?
Hey, thanks for taking the call. I was mostly calling about David Duke and Mark Collette. They kind of got in a big debate, you know, about if Russia's being drawn in. And I think they pretty much agreed 90%, but they kind of just were talking over each other. But I share Mark Collette's concern that Russia could be getting pulled into it. But if they just take these regions that voted to become part of Russia anyway, I think that would be done very easily and cheaply. And then, he could just... I thought he was just going to kind of hang out on the border and drain the West, you know, because we're going to have to pay all winter to keep the lights on in Ukraine, to support their whole government, to do everything, you know. So I kind of share his concern, but I don't think it's going to be that way, right, at least right now, if they just take these regions that they're voting on. I think it'd be pretty easy.
But, yeah, well, they're these regions, and then potentially you've got three or four more regions. If you see, the people who are responsible for the war, your Zelensky, your Victoria Nuland, they have no off-ramp. And Zelensky cannot sue for peace now. He can't negotiate for peace because there's no way he's going to get a deal nearly as good as the one that was offered to him back in March, early April, the one that was brokered by the Turks. He walked away from that. And now in the following 4 or 5 months, he's lost all. He's lost two more of their regions. He's lost 50,000 men, 40,000-50,000 more men. It's come at huge cost. How can he remain in office? So really, the only way forward is for him to be overthrown. I still think he's going to be overthrown. I think he'll be overthrown by his generals. There's a lot of reports of strife between himself and General Zaluzhny, who is the chief of staff, who doesn't want to do these offensives. He wants to husband troops and train new troops and marshal their resources and then maybe start fighting again in the spring. And Zelensky has got other priorities.
I'd like to see him go out Gaddafi style, you know, with the old bayonet treatment there. That'd be kind of nice. But
well, anyway. I think it's more likely to wind up in Miami or Tel Aviv.
Yeah. Real quick, I kind of disagree with Marcus there. I mean, I drive all over the country, and, you know, Manifest Destiny was, it was religious, but it was also racial. And I think when these areas, like, say, Los Angeles, you know, when you go into Los Angeles and down south to the border of San Diego, there's probably 20, I don't know, 20 million Mexicans, 10, at least 15 Mexicans there. And you know, that's the biggest population center out west, you know, west of Texas, besides like Seattle and Portland. And, I mean, I could easily just see that splitting it off. And to me, the time to say that would have been like voting for Pat Buchanan in like 1990. Like at this point, it would be much easier just to chop like everything from Los Angeles south off at least, you know. And I could see that happening very peacefully. And I think the problem with America is greed, you know, and I think same was setting up like a black territory like they were trying to do mm-hmm. in the 20s. People say, not in my backyard, you know, give them your state. And you get in these arguments, but, you know, it would have been pretty nice, I think, if they would have gave, say, black people like the south part of Florida or something. I don't know. I think people would be happier.
It's very difficult because we're a lot more mixed up. One saving grace they had in the former Soviet Union was that they weren't quite so mixed up. They were somewhat mixed up, and what we're seeing in Ukraine now is a result of that, because there were a lot of Russian speakers in the Ukraine, a lot of Russians in the Ukraine. But, you know, 30 years ago, when the Soviet Union broke up, it broke up because the president of the Russian part of the Soviet Union, Boris Yeltsin, declared he was leaving the Soviet Union. He was leaving all those other 14 republics, giving up on them. And right. At the mood that the Russian people were in at the time, they went along with it.
I think black and white are mixed up, but as far as Mexicans, they're mostly southwest right now. But you're right. Anyway, I hear the music. Sorry. Thanks for taking the call.
Hey, it's nice talking to you, Dan.
Thanks, Dan. Thanks for joining me, Patrick, on this World War III Monday night edition. We're in World War III. I think we are. If not economically, you know. So we'll see where this goes. Thanks a lot, man. Well, y'all have a good night.
Thank you.
President Biden will decide about running for re-election after the midterms. I'm Peter Serafine with today's Liberty Minute. When asked about his low poll numbers, Biden blamed COVID-19. He said that COVID had an impact on the psyche of the American people. Yeah, Joe, that's what hurt your poll numbers. It couldn't possibly be the increased crime rates or losing 20% of my retirement account because of your economy or fentanyl becoming the number one killer of adults under 45, huge increases in overdose deaths, millions of illegal aliens being allowed to just walk into the country, my utility bills increasing by 30%, sending $70 billion of our tax money to Ukraine, or spending another $1 trillion on your Inflation Extension Act, or our grocery bills being up 13%, or the national debt hitting $30 trillion. I'm sure you're right. COVID is what people are thinking about when polled. Find more news and commentary at liberty-lighthouse.com. Until tomorrow, Sivas Pashem, Parabellum.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.